I'm afraid I have an invincibility complex, which means that I'm constantly getting in trouble and I'm constantly failing and I'm constantly falling over. And I'll be the guy that wakes up in the morning and goes, yeah, I can do that. And then by 12 o'clock in the day, you know, I've got a cease and desist, or I've got someone hanging up on the phone on me, or I've got someone threatening legal action, or, you know, I constantly get in trouble. I constantly fail. And I focused on the fact that if someone says no to me, there's two things that could only be the reason that I got that no. One, I asked the wrong question. Two, I asked the wrong person.
You are listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
I am joined today on Hooked on Startups by none other than Steve Sims. Steve, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
So, see, as you can detect from Steve's mellifluous accent, you're not from around here. So, but listen, let me to see if I can completely not ruin your resume. So you're the author of Blue Fishing, which is the art of making things happen. And what you do in very simple terms is you make the impossible possible. So you make fantasies come true for clients, things like getting married by the Pope in the Vatican, being serenaded by Elton John, meeting Elon Musk. There's a whole, I got pages of things that you've created here. Let's talk about Blue Fishing, because I mean, Blue Fishing is this incredible book about really the magic. It's about, and I'm going to try not to cock this up, but it's really about how you manage to do the impossible. Is that a fair sort of description?
Well, we were chatting before this, and I really liked you, and I still really like you, and I don't want to start the podcast with an argument, but I think I would have to argue with the past basically minute. I don't believe I have any magic. I think people scare themselves so much. I just have fundamentals, basics, and I just focus on the basics. And I think people, they scare themselves to death by big picturing everything. I'm the guy that comes along and goes, yeah, all right, let's do that. So I'm there to basically demystify, de-scare, de-magic, de-impossibilize it. That's a new word I've just made up. And just allow you to get out of the way of your brain cells and actually make things happen. So that's the premise of it.
But how did you get into this business?
Well, I went to Harvard and Stanford, you know, which you'll probably realize quickly is wrong and I'm lying.
I'm going to cut that bit out. So it sounds like you did go to Harvard.
Actually, it's funny. I ended up speaking there, which was really funny. The fact that I'm an East London bricklayer that left school at the age of 15, worked for my dad's construction firm, knew that that was not for me, tried so many things. I ended up as a doorman in Hong Kong. And quite simply, I knew that I didn't want to be a doorman forever. So I started trying to hang around. Like they say, you are the combination of the five people you hang around with. I tried getting into groups of affluent, successful people, thinking quite simply, it would rub off on me. I was and am to a great degree an uneducated individual. I class myself as educated in certain areas, but I was certainly not educated by school. So the first half of my life, my adult life, you know, from 18 to like 30, was learning things by mistake and by accident. And I was ignorant to the point of why I couldn't fail. And when I did fail at something, I was like, well, I just learned how not to do something. And so I grew. And as I was getting into these affluent crowds, people would go, oh, I need to go to this party. And then they would follow it with, but I can't, it's only for A-list, or it's, oh, it costs too much. I've noticed that people say they want to do something and then give you 20 seconds or 20 reasons why it can't be done rather than the one that it should. So I was looking at this kind of like the king's clothes and going, well, why can't you? And then I would go and do it, come back to them and go, right, it's done, $2,000, please. Yes. And they'd be like, all right. And then they'd be all excited. They'd tell their friends. And before you knew it, I was trying to get a job from them, but they were coming to me going, oh, I'm going to Monaco. Can you do this for me? And I'd be like, yeah, all right, but that sounds like $5,000 worth. And I'd be like, all right, here you go. And I'd be like, wow, okay. So I was kind of the guy that you came to get stuff done, and it grew. And it just grew into everything from travel to concierge to flights, tickets, access. And then it kind of grew even more. I'd like so-and-so to come to my birthday party. I'd like to have dinner with Richard Branson. I'd like to close down the Academia in Florence and have a dinner party at the feet of Michelangelo's David. I'd like to get married in the Vatican. I'd like to have a wedding in the ice vaults of Poland. And it just grew. And of course, every time you do something, every other door opens up because you've already done something, which, and this is what makes me smile and giggle, which everyone perceives as impossible. Yes. And as we all know, it's on a t-shirt. It's only impossible until someone does it.
Exactly.
So, there you go. That's me going off on a tangent. I apologize.
No. This is entirely relevant because, I mean, I've noticed this so many times where it's all about your approach. It's all about your mindset. And so if we go through all of these courses and books and people saying that, we can teach you how to be successful. It's really just down to, I think, do you want to be successful or do you believe you can be successful as a person? Yeah. And so but the magic thing is it the fact that you can see stuff that's actually staring you in the face rather than looking for something that's always never going to be there?
I don't see the glitzy side. A lot of people will say, oh, I want to go to this because it's this and it's this and it's this. And they get over-enthused with the excitement and the panache of something. I just look at it that you want your bum to be on that seat at that event. I trivialize it. I reduce it and get it out of its glamour mode and just bring it down to the bulk basics. And then I go, well, okay, my goal is to get your bum on that seat. How do I do that? What needs to happen to make that happen? And I look at it without all the glitz and glamour. I've never looked at anything as impossible because, as you were saying, our basic belief syndrome is that if you look at it and go, it's impossible, you're right. If I look at it and I go, well, that may be awkward to do, but it's doable, that's the perception you want to be in.
The hardest thing, though, is to try and convince yourself, because you tend to be the hardest person to convince because you're always, not you, but I mean one.
Yeah, no, I get you.
Yeah. Because it always seems like you're feeding yourself this sort of these layers of BS, basically, where, I'd love to do this, but I'm not the right person. I haven't got the right education. And, I'll come up with, as you say, 20 other excuses. So what inspired you? Did you get to the point where you sort of felt like, I'm sick of these people? And there's more, there's more to it. And I want to try and get a bit deeper in this, or?
Yeah, it was. Do you know, I go back to this and I feel sorry for my next statement, but, stick with me because it'll make sense. I came from a very, very poor working class family that would work from 6 o'clock in the morning till, when the job's done. That was my thing. We got steak once a year on my parents' anniversary. And back in the 80s and 90s, and this will go for everyone worldwide, we only had about 4 TV stations and they came on at like 10 o'clock in the morning and they went off at midnight. So I focused, not because I wanted to, on hard graft, getting wet, getting dirty on the building site. And as I say, I was very poor. I didn't realize until my late 20s how wealthy I was because I was being taught the art of working hard, how to finish when the job... I didn't realize the values and the tools I was being taught. The trouble is now is we have 4 million TV stations and radio stations and podcasts and everything else. We have so much media coming at us that teaches us and instigates where we sit in the pecking order. Every night at 6 o'clock, you can turn on any TV station and you've got these entertainment shows showing you how the other half live because you can't. And they say to you, we're going to give you a peek at the other people's lifestyle. Fuck that. Get the lifestyle yourself. We're constantly taught as kids, and I'm not digressing.
No, you're not.
Constantly taught as kids, raise your hand when you've got a question, but don't raise it a second time or a third time because then you'll be laughed at. You're an idiot that doesn't get it. when quite openly, maybe it's the teacher that's not explaining it as well. So we're taught not to be embarrassed or to shy away from embarrassment. Don't be humiliated. Don't risk anything for fear of failure. Be scared of embarrassment if you fall over. And that translates as you get older, when we're told you're not good enough for this party. You're not the right person to walk down that red carpet. You can't do that. That's for others. And I'm the guy that's come along, you know, again, the king's clothes. I think in America, they call it the emperor's clothes.
Yeah.
Fable. I'm the guy that comes along and I go, why not? You know, why is my dollars not good enough for that? And I have seen something happen in the last 6 to 8 years. Now, if you go back in the 90s, rock stars were TV, movie, and music. Okay?
Yeah.
Anyone in the entertainment industry, that's what a celebrity was. Okay? Celebrities nowadays are also people like Bill Gates,
yeah,
Steve Jobs, Elon Musk. You know, they are doers. They are people that actually make things happen. So I am very happy to see that we're in a shift and you can make it yourself and walk that carpet, because you're only not walking down it because of your state of mind.
And do you find that the real issue is that people are looking for shortcuts? So they're looking for that instant gratification. So in other words, I think what you've identified is a really deep-seated issue, which is, and it's very difficult to break out of that because of all the brainwashing and all of the conditioning that we have, that this is, as you rightly say, this is our place in society. This is stuff that you can achieve and this is stuff that you can't achieve. So I think what you have is something that is very much in common with the likes of Elon Musk and Bill Gates and Richard Branson, which is this inability to accept something as being impossible. Is that a fair comment?
Well, it's a very beautiful one. I should get put on a T-shirt that you just quoted me in that sentence. But I have, I'm very fortunate to have met these people. And I'm very fortunate to have been able to watch them work, watch them think. And they've looked, a lot of people will look to solve a problem. Those people actually look at why the problem's there in the first place.
Yeah.
And Elon's a perfect example. Why try to make an engine faster and stronger? Why is the engine there?
Yeah.
And he's gone and got rid of it. He's made it battery because there's no friction, no working parts, therefore no friction, no working parts, nothing can wear out. So those people actually reevaluate how to solve problems by focusing on the problem, not the solution.
And is that, what has anything held you back? Have you found yourself in the company that you've created, in this ability to create magic? Do you find yourself almost questioning your ability? Do you find that you still even now have to push through your own barriers of fear of failure?
No, I'm and I laugh at that because I'm afraid I have an invincibility complex, which means that I'm constantly getting in trouble and I'm constantly failing and I'm constantly falling over. And I'll be the guy that wakes up in the morning and goes, yeah, I can do that. And then by 12 o'clock in the day, you know, I've got a cease and desist, or I've got someone hanging up on the phone on me, or I've got someone threatening legal action, or, you know, I constantly get in trouble. I constantly fail. And I focused on the fact that if someone says no to me, there's two things that could only be the reason that I got that no. One, I asked the wrong question. Two, I asked the wrong person.
Yeah.
So, you know, every time I get someone go, no, we can't do that, I'll try and readdress the question. And if that doesn't work, I'll go, all right, click, and I'll go and try and find someone else. So I do believe, and I would imagine as well, deep inside me, because I've been able to do the things that you've mentioned, plus many more. All of those things were impossible until I did them. All of those things were out of the realm of consideration before I sent you the Instagram pictures. So now I've got into it. You know, you want a chimp? I had a client phone me the other day, wanted a chimpanzee for an event in Florida. And in Florida, they're like, no, you can't do that, can't do that. Got him a chimp, you know? Everyone that says no, again, base it. Are we asking the wrong question or are we asking the wrong person? So I have actually built up a bit of an invincibility complex, and that's not always a good thing. And my wife every now and then goes, yeah, shouldn't be getting involved in that. But again, I believe that I'm a four-year-old. I'm the kid, and anyone that's got kids out there will know this one. It's the kid that just before dinner time goes, I want a lollipop. You can't have one. Why? Because dinner's coming up. Why? But I want a lollipop. Yeah, no, you're not allowed. As parents, we end up going, listen to me, go to your bedroom. Bottom line of it is, that's just asking why until they wear you down. I'm that four-year-old. I am a 51-year-old four-year-old. And yeah. I'm going to why you to death until I get what my client needs.
It's funny because, okay, let's talk about Steve Jobs. So Steve Jobs, and I can't remember precisely what the term was, but the people that worked with him would call this the something like the Steve Jobs reality shift or something. It was the fact that Steve Jobs was so determined that something was going to happen that it was almost as if he would change reality somehow, or the perception of reality of the people around him. And somehow it always got done. Even the seemingly impossible from a scientific perspective. So do you think that with strength of character and with true belief in something, that you make things happen, that you almost alter the landscape? Do you think that's what happens?
Yeah, you've said it very articulate. And I do know what you're talking about regarding Steve. And unfortunately, I never got the chance to meet with Steve Jobs. But I am aware of the concept and of his mindset. And I've been up to Cupertino a few times and met people that have been around him, and I've spoken to them about this. It's that why syndrome again. It's the simple fact that if you ask someone, do you want to go and do something, and make it sound, you know, impossible. Do you want to go and, you know, go and meet the Queen next Wednesday? Or do you want to go and play on stage with Guns N' Roses? You ask them something like that, and they may say yes, but then what they will do, without even you instigating it, without even you asking this, they will go into 20 minutes now of why that can't happen. Yeah. Oh, I'd love to play with Guns N' Roses, but I can't play the drums. I have no musical talent whatsoever. I played drums with Guns N' Roses, purely and simply because I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
And I was crap. And Matt saw them, couldn't teach me, and he's a brilliant drummer, but he couldn't teach me for shit. He just looked at me and went, all right, and that was it. So the bottom line of it is that you let people let their excuses get in the way. And this is what happens. As soon as you come up with an excuse, there's a roadblock. And then you come up with another excuse, there's another roadblock. Before you know it, you put so many roadblocks in front of yourself, there's no way you can achieve it. I had a client contact me once because he wanted to meet Richard Branson. And there was an event that I was working on in Los Angeles, and Richard Branson was going to be there, and I've worked with Richard before. And so I went, okay, I'll get you to meet Richard Branson. So I arranged that he could meet Richard Branson. As we were walking in, Richard was walking through the crowd. He was walking towards me, and I was next to this guy, and I was ready to introduce him. And the guy that was stood next to me literally did this, started to bow as Richard was coming forward. Now, Richard was getting accosted as he was coming through the crowd. I literally slapped the back of the head of this client and said to him, and I apologize for the people out there, you know, without, fuck you doing?
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, you know, Richard's coming over. I said, if you bow, you put the guy on a pedestal. He can never talk to you on an even keel because you have just escalated him further away from you.
Yes.
Stand up straight, look him in the eye, get your chest out, grab his hand and go, hey, my name's so-and-so. Rehearse it in your head. You've got 10 seconds to get that straight. And he did. And he was like, hey, how you doing? My name's so-and-so. And I made the intro and everything was fine. But so many people put these obstacles in front of themselves, elevate the issue to a point that it's unattainable. Whereas the real people out there, the real doers, they spend that exact same amount of energy going, I want to do this, instead of on this side of the fence coming up with all the reasons why they shouldn't. Why should I meet this guy? Why should I do that? Why should I be able to achieve that? And they focus this energy over there. Same energy, just focused on the opposite side of the question.
But isn't it all about self-worth, though? Isn't it all about the belief in who you are and the value you have? So in other words, if, you know, again, with the scenario, if you know, Richard comes up and I immediately think, I am not worthy. You know, I do my sort of Wayne's World thing. Why would he want to talk to me? That's the natural thing. So you're fighting. What are you actually fighting here? Is it conditioning? Is it the fact that society, is this a US thing, a UK thing? I mean, you must have dealt with lots of international clients. Are there some cultures that are more predisposed to feeling that they have a place?
This podcast just took a real turn. And I think good for you, mate. Good for you. It's a real pleasure to be on this path. I work with a lot of international people, and there are a lot of countries that have class systems where, quite simply, no, you're not worthy because you've come from this family. One of the freest is the UK. Even though they try to still hold on to that class society, it's dying, thank God. And America is still where we urge the underdog to come up. We have done ever since Rocky, Rambo, and everything else. We want people to come from nothing and succeed. So America's very, very good for that. But you're right. It is the conditioning. And sadly, the conditioning is still forced. And I spoke earlier about the entertainment shows going, you're not worthy. It's even down to the modeling of clothing. You walk into, you know, like Armani or Prada or something like that, and there's a good-looking lad wearing a shirt, and the shirt's on, and you start looking and you're going, I'm damned if I'm going to look like that wearing that shirt. You know, Victoria's Secrets. You know, you've got those models on the front, and the women feel very uncomfortable about going in there because they look at this girl and they go, that's how it's supposed to look. There is a lot of conditioning for media that forces us to think the wrong ways. And you're right. They forced us to think we're not worthy of that. And I'm here to tell you that you absolutely are. And your dollar is the exact same power as anyone else's dollar.
So you're dealing with people on a one-to-one basis. So part of what you do, I think, it seems with concierge, I think is a word that is massively under describes what you do, but there's a word that you use. So in the preface of your book, you say, if people say, what do you do? You say, I'm a concierge. So that's why I'm saying it. But do you find that part of what you're doing is you're doing this thing that these people want, but also do you end up being this involuntary mentor saying, look, okay, I can get you in front of the Pope, or I can get you in front of Elton John, but you know, you're in no shape to meet these people because you're going to be, as you mentioned before, this sort of blithering, blubbering wreck. So let's just spend a couple of hours where I can get your head in the right place. Did you find that you end up doing a psychiatrist job, just trying to get these people's...
Yeah, I am a therapist. I have no qualifications to be a therapist, but I do that a lot. I've had people... We've been down to Monaco, and a lesson was taught to me once. I met up with a guy that owns the largest Ferrari dealership in Texas. And one of his team turned around to me and he said, the guy that comes into the dealership on a Saturday wearing a suit can't afford a Ferrari. The guy that comes in on a Tuesday wearing sneakers and shorts and a grubby T-shirt is probably on his fourth. Yeah. So it's a way that people do change. And I've been to events before. I've been to events where people have come out ready to go to the event, and I've gone, whoa, you might as well have a sticker on your head as newbie. So let's go back, get that outfit on, get your T-shirt on, your jeans, get comfy, pretend you're coming down to a wine bar with me, or pretend you're coming down to have a cocktail with me. Chill, and then I'll take you in. And the funny thing is, they walk into that room and they suddenly get to see all these other newbies standing out like sore thumbs. So you do actually get a lot of people that come to me. They will first of all try to dilute what they want because of the embarrassment of actually saying what excites them. And then you've got to prepare them to be able to, and here's the key, you've got to prepare them not only to walk into the environment that they want to walk into, but also mentally to be able to receive it. And you can think about that when you've got people that have got so nervous about going somewhere, they're so on pins and needles about the event, you ask them afterwards about the event, oh, I don't remember much about it. I got drunk, you know, and I've heard that so many times. So you've got to have people, and I've done it myself. You've got to have people prepared to be able to walk in and receive the best from that event.
And there's a lot of talk about this concept of the authentic self. In other words, you know, you build layers and layers of of personality that you want to be or that you think you should be. And I think the real challenge is to actually try and figure out, I think it's almost like you spend half your life layering stuff on, and then you spend the other half of your life trying to peel it all back, figuring out who it is that you are underneath all this sort of crap that you've layered on. So is the challenge really to find your authentic self? And I sort of hate this expression because it's so overused. But if you find out who you really are and you're, is it the fact that you are just so comfortable with who you are as a person that allows you just to say, look, I can do all of this because it's not what have I got to lose, and I'm not embarrassed by it, and I'm not going to be, you know, it's just the fact that if it doesn't go well, it doesn't go well. It's just, it's not going to change who I am. This is a very long question. So my question is your success from the fact that you don't have these airs and graces? You don't, you're just happy with who you are as a person.
I thought I did have airs and graces. I thought I was damn near Hugh Grant. Okay, so me and you, and I'm liking you more as the interview goes on. Me and you are both on the same path of this horrible word, authenticity. It's the freaking coffee mug and mouse pad logo of the year. Last year it was 10X. The year before that it was life hack. God knows what it's going to be this next year. But this year it was authenticity. That's bullshit. And there's nothing stupider than trying to guess what the other people think of you. Okay, what I've done is I've gone for one word which I absolutely love, which I encourage to be the keyword of 2018. I've gone for transparency. Okay, I can communicate with anybody and understand whether or not I resonate with them if I'm talking with them rather than the clothing or the perception they want me to see. I don't want shields and costumes in front of our interaction. So here it is. This is me. I ride motorcycles. I use bad hair products. I drink too much whiskey. I've got some really bad jokes. This is it. Can we get on? Now I want to see how naked you are. I want to understand the transparency in you. And I find, for me, what has been lucky for me is by being transparent and being, and I love this logo, I didn't come up with it, it was Joe Polish, being impossible to misunderstand.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was Joe Polish. Thank you. All hail Joe.
Yes.
I love to be able to go somewhere where I am impossible to misunderstand, which will tell you straight away, can you resonate with me? Can we connect? If not, stay over that side of the room or walk past and give a little nod. So I'm a great believer in the transparency, and I've also found it's very easy for you to resonate with me and to make that decision and to utilize your gut intelligence as to whether or not I'm the kind of person you want in your life or not.
And then you have false transparency, and that is where someone says, Steve, I'm going to ask you this question directly because that's the sort of person I am. I'm a direct person. And I just want you to know that because I'm transparent about who I am and I'm direct. So are you ready, Steve, for this direct question, which I'm about to ask you? Before I ask you that, let me just tell you a little bit more about myself before I tell you how transparent I am. So that's, but the trick is, how do you become transparent? Because I'd love to be transparent, but I'm a little bit afraid because that's nakedness. If I start talking to you and saying, I really feel this way, I think we should not do this, but I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say something completely different. And being English is also another sort of layer of complexity where I can't be rude to you. I'm going to just say that let's have lunch, which means I never want to see you again.
Yeah. Yeah, we do that, don't we? Someone actually said to me a while ago, they went, I love your accent. It makes you sound more intelligent than me. I went, nope, I am more intelligent than you.
I get that a lot, but I just...
Yeah, the trouble is what I want and what happens are two different things. When I meet someone, you've got to go harvesting. You've got to pick off those layers. You've got to find those little chinks. You've got to get into it and go, oh, you were talking about that. Why is that important to you? You've got to challenge the conversation. Now, I mentioned to you earlier about my gut. I think my gut is more intelligent than my head. My head can get caught up on how sparkly it is, how fast it is or how red it is. But my gut tells me whether or not there's substance, it's truthful, it's I can resonate with it, can I engage with it? So when I'm talking to someone, my gut's telling me, is this good or is it bad? You know, and you know, I can work out from that and trust it. But if something's not right, that's where your challenge comes in, and you go, hey, we're having a great conversation. Let's go over here a second. So you may be talking to someone, and that person you kind of get on with, but they're holding back a little bit. It may be because of the vicinity of people they're in. So you say to them, hey, hang on a minute, let's go grab a drink together. And you go to the bar to get drinks. I'm going to get drinks. What drinks do you want? You're over there. You've now taken them into a different environment. And you can say, why did you come here tonight? Now, why are you here? You know, is your wife here? No. Why did you leave your wife and come here? Is she ugly? You know, just you can have a little bit of a joke with it. Humor's a great way to break through. But you also are asking very blunt, direct quips. You're keeping it short and sharp. Why are you here tonight? It interests me. Everyone's here tonight, supposed to be a high-powered event. Why did you walk through the door? You know, and just ask those kind of, to challenge them and to pick up on those little bits and then drill in that direct. You'll be amazed at how well you can get through to people quickly.
So on the theme of transparency, but then there's this concept that you're talking about now, which is connection. So in other words, you can have a conversation with someone that in fact ends up being a non-versation because you're not really interested in, it's a bit like typically when you ask someone, what do you do? It's normally because you want to know whether or not what you do is better than them, or you want to find out whether or not they can be of use to you. No one really is interested in what that other person does. And I know exactly what you mean about the gut thing, because you actually, when you're talking to someone, you have to make an effort to want to engage. You have to really focus and try and connect with that person. And do you find that with a lot of people that you see and work with, that there isn't any real connection? There's a lot of moving parts, but they're all passing ships in the night.
Yeah, again, I'm going to argue with you. You mentioned about the concierge bit. Depending on what room I'm in, it depends on what I tell you I do. So if I'm in a room where I'm kind of, you know, in a bunch of entrepreneurs and there's a few people in there that know me, I'm going to tell you, yeah, I'm just a concierge, mate, and I will leave it at that. If I'm in a room, like for argument's sake, and I'm living in Hollywood, so if I'm at a school event or something like that, someone says to me, oh, what do you do? I go, oh, I'm a plumber. I own a plumbing company, you know? So I have all these different answers for the type of things. I've been to events where I've told them I'm actually the valet boy, but they told me they had some spare room in here, so I just came in, you know?
And that's I've just, done that. But that's just you playing with them because you're,
yeah,
because but you know who comes, you are. You want to play the game of the, you know, you want to see what their reaction is, and you're toying with them there, which is.
I am. Yeah, I am toying with them, but here's where the challenge with your question comes. When you order a plumber, if the plumber turns up in a Ferrari and he's got a pinstripe suit and he's got a plumbing bag and he's got a plumbing business card, your head's telling you, well, he's got the tools and he's got the business card, but something's telling you in your stomach, this isn't right, okay? Now, that's a strange example, but when I meet someone, and this is probably something I've honed over the years, and it was a mentor that taught me this. When you're talking to someone, the bottom line of it is, there should be no effort.
Yeah.
It should be some, like me and you, we could have not had this podcast today. We were already off chatting way before then, okay? We could, you may have forgot to hit record, and we're just, you know, shooting the breeze now. But there was no effort. Now, if I'm on a podcast and I'm with the person and there's no connection, my head has to come in and go, hang on, this is for me to sell my book. We haven't been selling the book on this. We've been engaged in a conversation and there's been no effort because my stomach tells me this is a person I can communicate with.
I think that is about effort. I think people, you need to make an effort to listen. You almost have to try and turn yourself from transmit mode into receive mode.
Ah, no, that's a decision. That's not an effort. That's a decision. You need to decide, am I going to trust my stomach? The stomach's going to tell you, do you resonate with this person? Is there something you like about this person? I've been in rooms where someone's tried to talk to me.
Yeah, you're right. You're talking about different things.
I haven't wanted to talk to them because I can see that there's no connect. And I've literally taken them to the side and I've gone, hey, I appreciate you coming over to talk to me, but there's something telling me that we're not going to be lifelong buddies. This is a great environment for you to do what you're doing. In fact, that fellow over there may well be someone better for you to connect. So out of respect for your energy, your enthusiasm, and both of our time, go and try him. Don't spin your wheels here. All the best. Have a great night. And then walked away. So I've killed things quickly. Now, that may look very harsh, but I've had people like that actually come up to me in the night and go, thanks for that. I appreciate it. All the best. All the best with you. So if it doesn't feel good here, kill it quick and get on with someone that it does.
I agree, but I want to bring it back to David Allen, because funnily enough, you mentioned that, and I just happen to have his book, because I read this thing, you know, Dave Allen's The Art of Stress-Free Productivity and Getting Things Done. So the reason we're talking about this is, how do you get out of your own way and how do you get things done? In other words, and the whole sort of rationale almost is like, is you don't get things done if you try and be somebody else. You don't get things done if you think you're not worthy. And what we're saying about transparency and connection is that there are skills that you can learn. There are things you can do. Yeah. And is that where you found this? The fact that you mentioned the mentor and you mentioned Joe Polish and some of the things that he's taught you, which has obviously resonated. But what things have you learned that made you think, you know what? This is the thing that makes me successful, because I'm listening. I'm taking I make a decision to listen to someone, not to leap in. I make a decision to try and feel what this person is saying, to try and sort of, you know, pick up that energy so that I can tell if my gut rather than leaping in.
Yeah. There is a third situation, which is equally as bad as the others you were talking about. It's actually ending up being in business with someone you don't resonate with.
Yeah.
You know, you say that you can't go forward by wearing a costume and by giving off a fake perception. Sadly, sometimes you can, because the other person isn't working on that gut either, and you end up in a relationship that you shouldn't be in. That's the worst case scenario. Now, there's been many times in my life where I ended up thinking to myself, no one's going to take me seriously doing what I'm doing by riding around on a motorcycle with all these tattoos and earrings. I better cover up my sleeves and I better take all my earrings out. And I did that. And I conformed. And do you know the funny thing was? I got more money. I got more clients. I didn't like any of them.
Yeah.
And I suddenly realized that my life was more painful and I wasn't resonating with people. I was calling people Mr.
Yes.
Instead of Jim, Bob. And again, you phone up your mate, you go, Steve, how are you doing? No effort required. You phone up someone you don't like. It's, oh, Mr. Rogers. Yeah, it's a great day. All of a sudden, you're having a confine. You get off the phone, you go, oh. So it was that decision, those experiences, those bad experiences of being in bad relationships that come to my forefront whenever I meet someone where my stomach starts twiddling and I go, hang on, Mr. Rogers, no, this isn't happening now. Thanks, buddy. It's not happening tonight. So it's been those scars and education, but also, I suppose this is where I plugged a book, but you know,
No.
Buy the book. But anyway, in the book, I actually have something I call the chug test, and it's very primitive and very raw. And I'll tell you what it is. You don't have to buy the book. I'll tell you what it is. As you're walking up the high street, on the opposite side of the high street, someone in your world is walking the other way. Now you can focus it on being your personal life, business, salesman, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, whoever, someone on the other side of the road is walking in the opposite direction. You've got two choices. A, do you quickly look left and pretend as though you're really interested in that mattress store? Or do you B, run across the road, jump in front of them and go, Johnny, hey, let's go chug a beer. Let's go grab a coffee. Those are your two choices. How many times in your life, metaphorically, have you quickly looked in the mattress store, checking the reflection to make sure they've gone by before you go, oh, they've gone, and walk on? If you do that, or if you would do that, and think about it, pour yourself a drink and think about these people and get them on a list and go, Johnny, if Johnny was on the street, would I? No. Then get them out of your life.
These are the vampires.
These are the vampires. These are people that are sucking your energy and you are having to conform and change and edit you to communicate with. And trust me, you ain't communicating. You're just saying words between each other because there's no resonance. If you fall on your ass, they're not putting their hand down to pick you up unless they're getting something out of you. Get rid of them out of your life and make space for people in your life that you do want to do the chug test with, that you do want to run over and embrace, surprise, grab from behind, drag them into a bar and have a drink with them. Get those people in your life and get rid of all the vampires because they are cancerous. And cancer is not the size of an elephant. It's that small and it kills. You can't cure it by a tablet. So cut it out. They are cancerous in your life and they should not be there. And those are the people that are the vampires. Use that test, get them out and fill it only with good people.
But how do you recognize these people? How do you know that? I mean, there are some people that...
Do that.
The chug test, yes.
I know it sounds weird, but you know, I do this test quite often and I had an accountant. And every time I'd speak to my accountant would be like, oh, yeah, Steve, no, these deductions here. Oh, yeah. I just thought myself, every time I talk to him, he sounds like the world's at an end. Now he's an accountant. He's not a showman. Fair enough. That's his role. But I thought, I don't want to speak to him. Surely there's got to be an accountant that I do want to speak to. So he failed the chug test. He was marked as gone. I went and found another accountant. Yes, they're going to tell you that you're in trouble. Yes, they're going to tell you that, you know, the world's coming to an end because they're accountants and how can you survive and make ends meet? But I get on with my accountant now. So you've really got to be very disciplined. And this is what's going to happen. Do it once. It's horrible. Do it twice. It's, you know, it hurts a little bit. Do it 3, 4, 5 times. It's a habit. And trust me, you're looking after you. And as you do that, imagine if only the people in your life are positive, energetic, forceful, trustworthy, loyal, resonant people. Your self-worth, your value escalates to where the world can't contain it.
And I completely agree with you. Absolutely agree with you without reservation because what happens is then your world becomes a world of possibilities.
Yes.
And that's it. In other words, everything is possible. Not only some things are possible because these guys here are dragging you down. And I think it is about that energy feeling, that gut instinct, as you say, that, you know, I'm with these people. And it's not that you get the support from these people that you need. You're not relying on them. They're not your crutch. It's just the fact that it is the natural thing is that the answer is yes. Everything is yes. I mean, there are challenges, but let's work on the basis that the answer is yes, you can do this. And if you didn't have a sense of humor, you shouldn't have joined.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're back on. You did it perfectly. You said it far better than I did.
We can answer. Yeah. Well, that's because I've read a few pages of your books.
Only a few, damn it.
I, you know, I'm a slow reader. But do you find also that the older you get, the more you realize that people just don't care about you? You spend your adult life worrying what people think about you, what you wear, what you say, what you do. And the reality is that no one cares.
Yeah, I'm lucky that I found out all of these things in my early 30s. In my early 30s, I started kind of like wandering around going, is this really it? I remember being so panicked and so in awe of the events and the places I was going that I would get into a room and then I'd be in the room and I'd be like, well, okay, there's so-and-so there and there's someone there that's famous. And I'm like, is this it? You know, why have the drums not come out as I've entered the room? Why have I not been elevated on a floating carpet?
Because you probably broke them last time you played them.
Yeah, that's probably it, yeah. But yeah, I've been banned by Matt. You know, this situation was that it wasn't as wonderful. There was no crescendo. And then I started looking inwards and going, well, hang on a minute. Does this make me happy? And that was the time that I started looking at a different barometer. I'd always wanted to be successful. And as a youngster, you look at success as money.
Yeah.
Okay. As I grew up, I looked at success and having money, and that would make me rich. Yeah. And then as I started making money, I could call myself rich. But then I suddenly started looking at this other barometer called wealth. And wealth was, am my family safe?
Yeah.
Do I have someone that I can call at 2 o'clock in the morning? Do I have someone that if I fall on my ass tomorrow over some terrible scandal, Are they going to be the first one to phone me and pick me up?
Yeah.
That's wealth. Having enough gas in the tank, whiskey in the shelves, and your family safe and fed. That's wealth.
You're right.
And that was the one that actually started me putting my earrings back in, going back out, meeting people on the bikes and just going, hey, you don't retain me to date me. You retain me because I do. What do you need me to do?
Exactly.
And I could very much be me once I got my barometer accurate on what wealth was. And I focused on the wealth and not on the rich.
And again, I think one of the critical things as well is perception, is how you perceive things. Nothing has actually changed in the world around you.
Nope.
All that's changed is your perception, which comes back to one of your critical points in your book, which I will, you know, push because I think it's a great book, is the fact that it is your perception. The world runs around you. It doesn't give two shits what you do, but it's how you feel you position yourself. And so that's why everything you say is incredibly relevant. It's real. It's learned. It's not something that you've learned from a $200 course on the internet and you're just regurgitating. It's stuff that is sort of from the heart, learned in the school of hard knocks, as it were.
Well, that's why I said I class myself now as an educated man, but school had nothing to do with that education. It was getting screwed, getting sued, getting broke, getting forced out of business, partners ripping you off, clients lying to you. You know, all of those things have taught me how not to do things. And I remember, again, when I was poor, when I was young, I remember my dad looking at me and, thick Irish lad turned around and went, no one ever drowned by falling in the water, son. They drowned by staying there.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And I remember as a kid going, what the hell was that supposed to mean? And then as you get older, you went, oh yeah, fight's not over when I go down. It's when I stop getting up.
Exactly. And so the next question then, so it reminds me a bit when you're at school and you go to school the first time and the rooms are all huge and everything looks massive. And then when you go back after you've left school, everything just looks tiny and small. But then as the perception changes for you, what is now, what is the next step? How do you, because you have this, the charity that you work with, and it's, you know, which is Blue Cause. And I'm not suggesting that it's all about giving back and everything, but is there a calling for you? Do you find that with all of this experience and dealing with people, is there almost like a, forgive my expression, but do you feel like almost like a higher calling? Like there's more I can do to try and get under the skin of all these people and help them follow the same path that I do.
Yeah, I am a searcher. I like to challenge myself. We all have fears. My fear is being in the exact same place today in 6 months' time with no further growth. Now, my life's pretty damn good now. But hey, 6 months without growing, without trying something different, that scares me. So when I was asked to do the book, I thought it'd be a bit of fun. I actually then found it quite stressful because I suddenly realized that I had a debt, I had a commitment, and I didn't want to give someone a book that just told you how fun and frolicky I was and all the wonderful things I did.
How many rewrites did you do?
Yeah. We actually, funny enough, we wrote half a book. And it concerned me because I had a ghostwriter doing it and I didn't resonate with the ghostwriter. And all of these pages were like, oh, and then I took over this museum and I got Andrea Bocelli to come in and do this. And it was just nothing more than an ego bash. And I sent it to the publishers and I said to them, I don't like it. I don't like the ghostwriter. And they turned around to me and they said, the problem's not the ghostwriter. It's your perception of the ghostwriter. You don't want someone ghostwriting your story. You want someone translating it.
Yes.
And those people are there to pull out the nuggets that you do normally that you wouldn't think of putting in the book. So look at them as a translator, not as a ghostwriter. That changed my relationship straight away. And then in turn, it changed the book. Yeah. We went, well, hang on a minute. If I'm giving you these wisdoms of what I've learned from falling over and getting kicked in the head, then surely this should be a how-to, not a how I did book. Yes. And so it very easily translated into, I'm going to show you what I do that I did with the Vatican that you can do with anything in your life. So it became those underlying fundamentals. Then what happened was a lot more people that I had been mentoring and coaching and consulting with, they went into bigger depth because they suddenly started seeing these books and going, how come you didn't talk to me about this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I'd be like, whoa. So we've started a lot more consulting, a lot more speaking engagements. Brilliant. It's really opened up an entire new chapter. And it's funny you mention that, because at this moment in time, and I don't know when this will go live, so we'll just go, it's available now. We're actually getting ready with our next chapter. And it's literally called that. So it's funny you mentioned it. Our next chapter project, whereas I'm going to try and take what I've learned over like 33 years and mentor and coach and consult with companies, individuals, and entrepreneurs. And that's frightening. And that's where the excitement comes. You know, well,
I can tell you, and that's where you get a whole new rush of, I am not worthy.
Yeah. You're right. I'm speaking to people now and they're like, how do we do that? And I'm going, well, why do we want to do that? Let's analyze why we're going for it. And it's quite often a dog with a bone. They see the bone. They don't know why they need it, but hell, I need that bone and I'll sell my firstborn. And getting a 30,000 foot view of something can be quite revealing when you're not entrenched in it. And you can go forward and go, why do we care if we got the bone? What's it going to do if we get the bone?
And it's funny how when you come out the other side and you look back, how clear everything is with that hindsight.
It's been exciting. And I'm enjoying it. I've only got in ankle deep at the moment. The concierge runs itself. I get involved only when it's the fun and frolicky stuff. But I'm very, very excited about this new chapter and how the book's been received. I've had no one that hates it. If you hate it, let me know. If you hate it, tell a lot of people you hate it. It's not for everyone, but so far, I've had no one that doesn't like it.
That's brilliant. Well, anyway, talking about fun and frolicky stuff, I've got 10 questions for you, which are not mine. They're from a guy called James Lipton, who is far more famous than I am. And so the only reason I mention it is because he's probably got a lot more money than me and he's connected to lawyers. So these are not my questions, but thank you, James, for letting me borrow them. But my first question then, Steve Sims, is what is your favorite word?
Yes.
What is your least favorite word?
No.
What are you most excited about right now?
This podcast.
Thank you. And what turns you off right now? Careful.
What turns me off? I don't do anything that turns me off. What turns me off? Tofu.
I'm going to have to beg to differ, but we can have that as a separate conversation. What sound or noise do you love?
Motorcycles.
You'd never guess. And what sound or noise do you hate?
Kids crying.
And what is your favorite curse word?
Bollocks.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Fantastic. Mine too. Completely agree with you. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Well, seeing as the current one's screwing it up, I would have to say president.
That would be just fantastic. And what profession would you not like to attempt?
Lawyers.
And my final question is, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I have a whiskey waiting for you. Let's have a chat.
Brilliant, Steve. Thank you so much. It's been the most amazing fun. My final question is, how do people get in contact with you? How do they find out about the book? How do they buy it? How do they read more and understand more about what you do?
Thank you. I have a website, stevedsims.com. That's 1M. You can find me on all the usual social platforms, Steve D. Sims. But go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the usual suspects. And it's Blue Fishing, the art of making things happen.
Steve, it's been brilliant. Thanks again.
Cheers, mate.